This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Errol Morris, directed the new film, The Fog of War, which has been appearing on many critics' 10 best lists. This documentary is edited from over 20 hours of interviews with Robert McNamara, who served as Secretary of Defense under Presidents Kennedy and Johnson. He was one of the architects of the war in Vietnam, but he said that by the time he left the Johnson administration in 1967, he had become increasingly skeptical about the war and worried that more and more people were being killed and we weren't accomplishing our goals. McNamara has remained an enigmatic figure. For many years, he would not speak about his role in the war. That silence was broken by his 1995 memoir, in which he discussed what led to his growing skepticism, but he disappointed his critics by not apologizing for his role in the war. In Morris's film, McNamara reflects on the lessons he's learned from Vietnam and World War II, in which he helped plan the firebombing of Tokyo. McNamara was the youngest ever Secretary of Defense, age 44, and is now 87 years old. Errol Morris's films investigate the obsessions and motivations of his subjects through intensive interviews. His films include Mr. Death, Fast, Cheap, and Out of Control, and A Thin Blue Line. Here's a clip from the beginning of The Fog of War.
It's almost impossible for our people today to put themselves back into that period. In my 7 years as secretary, we came within a hair's breadth of war with the Soviet Union on three different occasions. 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, for 7 years as Secretary of Defense, I lived the Cold War. During the Kennedy administration, they designed a 100 megaton bomb. It was tested in the atmosphere. I remember this. Cold War? Hell, it was a hot war.
You know, one of the things that really astonished me watching The Fog of War was that McNamara was really lively, anecdotal, interesting, and I always thought of him, among other things, as cold and kind of inaccessible. In other words, that you'd never get anything out of him. what surprised you about actually talking with him?
One of the things I like about interviews, maybe you feel the same way, to me, interviews are investigative. I never know what I'm going to hear. In fact, to the extent that I know what I'm going to hear, I'm not terribly interested. I want to be surprised. I want something unexpected to happen. And that certainly was the case with my interviews with Robert McNamara. A picture of a very different kind of man than I had been familiar with years ago. Seeing him on television, reading about him in the papers. Far more interesting, far more complex man.
Give me an example of something he said that really surprised you.
Well, the most surprising thing was discovering that his role in Vietnam was different than I had thought. Remember, the Vietnam War was known to many people as McNamara's War. He became not only associated with the war, people thought of it as his war, as though he was the person primarily responsible for it. He was the hawk. He was the guy who pushed other people towards escalation, to bombing, to troops on the ground. You want an explanation for how we became mired in Vietnam? Look no further than Robert S. McNamara. And yet, as I got deeper and deeper into this story, my view of him and his role in history changed.
How did it change?
It changed in so many ways. I had read, in retrospect, in 1995, this was his supposed mea culpa for Vietnam.
His memoir.
His memoir. And what surprised me was the book I was reading was so different than the book I saw described in many, many reviews and editorials. didn't seem to be a mea culpa at all. More this anguished attempt to go back into the past to try to figure out what happened and why it happened. There's this very odd conversation. The Fog of War actually has these recently released presidential recordings. Everybody knows Nixon made recordings. But it's less well known that Kennedy and Johnson recorded their conversations as well. Kennedy recorded cabinet meetings. Johnson recorded phone calls. So you can actually hear the President of the United States talking with McNamara. A front row seat in history, if you like. And there's one powerful conversation. October 2nd, 1963. This is less than 2 months before Kennedy was assassinated. We hear McNamara and the President talking. And McNamara is urging Kennedy to set a timetable, a schedule for getting out of Vietnam. This is the man who we consider to be the worst hawk of all in the administration, the most bellicose advisor of all in the administration.
It's tempting to kind of go over your whole film point by point and talk about all the points that Robert McNamara makes, but I think I should let our listeners see the movie and talk instead about how the movie was made. But first, I do want to just get to a couple of the very interesting points that McNamara makes in the movie. And one of them is in talking about World War II, where he served under General Curtis LeMay, and he participated in the planning of the firebombing of Tokyo, in which 100,000 civilians were killed. And he says something very interesting about war criminals. Why don't we hear this excerpt of your movie? This is an excerpt of Robert McNamara speaking in Errol Morris's documentary, The Fog of War.
I don't fault Truman for dropping the nuclear bomb. The U.S.-Japanese War was one of the most brutal wars in all of human history. Kamikaze pilots, suicide, unbelievable. What one can criticize is that the human race prior to that time and today has not really grappled with what are, I'll call it, the rules of war. Was there a rule then that said you shouldn't bomb, shouldn't kill, shouldn't burn to death 100,000 civilians in a night? LeMay said if we'd lost the war, we'd all have been prosecuted as war criminals. And I think he's right. He, and I'd say I, were behaving as war criminals.
Robert McNamara speaking in the documentary The Fog of War. Errol Morris, when he said that to you, were you surprised to hear his thoughts about what makes a war crime a war crime?
Yes, particularly because this part of the interview happened very early on, probably within the first half hour of my first interview with Robert McNamara. The movie doesn't tell you. There's no flashing light that goes on and says, this is really something new, this is really something extraordinary. So much has been written about the dropping of the two atomic bombs on Japan in 1945. Comparatively little has been written about the firebombing of 67 cities in Japan before we bombed Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And here we have McNamara, who was involved in these firebombings, speak of them as a war crime. Very powerful, because aren't we all used to thinking of World War II as a just war? After all, good and evil were well-defined. We were on the side of good. They were on the side of evil. And yet, here is Robert McNamara telling us, yes, that was true, but there is conduct within a just war which is criminal. Very, very powerful and very interesting.
Now, in talking about his role in Vietnam, he certainly gives the impression that he tried to talk President Johnson out of the war, tried to decreasing our presence in Vietnam. Do you believe that that was consistently his point of view with Johnson?
It's a tortured story. I believe that if Kennedy had lived, in all likelihood, there would not have been extensive bombing and 500,000 ground troops in Vietnam. It's one of those great mysteries that can't be really answered for certain. But the story leans in that direction. There is considerable amount of evidence to suggest that's the case. One thing that's really interesting, I sometimes say, well, this revised story about Vietnam that emerges in the fog of war, it's not necessarily a better story. It's just a different story because it raises a whole set of different questions. If McNamara was opposed to the war, why did he become a part of its escalation? Why did he continue to serve Johnson if he disagreed with his policies? Why did he stay on until 1968? And why, when he left the administration, did he remain silent? The war went on. 69, 70, 71, 72, 73, 74, 75. Between 2 and 3 million Vietnamese died, and 58,000 Americans.
Now, aren't these the questions that he still refuses to answer? The questions that you just raised?
Yes and no. The movie has an epilogue where I return to some of the central mysteries of this story. I feel that they're partial answers, but this is not a movie where every T can be crossed and every I dotted. There are mysteries that remain for me, having made the movie.
My guest is film director Errol Morris. His new documentary about Robert McNamara is called The Fog of War. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is director Errol Morris. His new film, The Fog of War, is an extensive interview with former Secretary of Defense Robert McNamara, reflecting on the lessons he learned from his role in Vietnam and World War II. He reaches several conclusions and has several lessons that he feels like he's learned from his involvement in World War II and the Vietnam War. And one of his conclusions is you need to empathize with your enemy. But he says about Vietnam, we didn't know the Vietnamese well enough to empathize and put ourselves in their shoes. We saw the war in Vietnam as a Cold War. They saw it as a Civil War. And when I heard him say that, I thought, you know, what a true and interesting lesson to have learned and to impart to us. But then I thought for a second, isn't that what the anti-war movement was saying all along, that, you know, this isn't just the Cold War, this is a Civil War. Why are we involved there? I mean, isn't that something that people were shouting at him for years?
Yes. This is a movie with one interview, but sometimes I think there are actually two characters. The 85-year-old McNamara speaking to the 45-year-old McNamara. And one
yeah,
of the questions.
I know exactly what you mean. I mean, that was my, as a viewer, that was my impression too. Yeah.
And one question that keeps coming up again and again, is this the same man? Are these two different men?
Mm-hmm.
Well, in one sense, of course they're not. But are they the same? And in what way are they different, if they are different? You're absolutely right. Many of the things that McNamara says could have come out of anti-war demonstrators. It could have been things that they said verbatim in 1965. People who really hate McNamara, and there are many, when they hear about the lessons, they say, why do we want to hear anything this man says? Shouldn't he remain silent? My answer is an emphatic no. He has been so much a part of history, and the stories that he tells about history are really interesting and important stories. And they're stories by a man who knows.
You know, you're talking about him being like the 85-year-old McNamara talking to the 40-year-old or 45-year-old McNamara. And I felt as a viewer that there were two versions of me watching the movie.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, and I'll explain what I mean. Because, like, when he talks about...
By the way, it's also true in my case.
Oh, really? Really? Yeah. So, well, let me give you my example. When I was watching the movie and he says things like, during the war in Vietnam, his family was so stressed out, his family got ulcers. I can't remember if he got ulcers too. And that, you know, that his family was just like sickened by all of the stress. And one part of me thought, wow, that's really interesting that that it was so stressful on your family. And that's a very kind of, that elicited a very sympathetic response from me. But then the other part of me was saying, well, I should think so. The whole country was divided by this war. The country was at war with itself. Americans were dying. Vietnamese were dying. So many lives of Americans were totally changed by the war.
America was totally changed.
Right.
By the war.
So in that sense, I think, well, you know, sure you'd have ulcers. I mean, geez. So I just felt myself having this constant dialogue with myself about my reactions to him and what he was saying. Tell me about the dialogue you had with yourself making the movie.
Well, my feelings about Vietnam haven't changed over the years. I demonstrated against the war as a young student because I found the war appalling. And now, many, many years later, I still find it appalling. Sometimes I think, am I being too easy on McNamara? Other times I think, am I being too hard on him? One undeniable aspect of the man is that he produces these very, very strong feelings. And yet I feel privileged to have been able to talk to him and to make this movie. It's interesting. I started these interviews before 9/11. The first interview with McNamara was in May of 2001. I never thought that this would be a movie about now, that this would be a movie about today.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, as I continued to work on the film, the themes, the stories, the history that McNamara describes became more and more and more relevant to what is going on in the world today.
There are some people who've seen the movie who think that in the movie, McNamara is still doing a bit of, you know, lying, deceiving, exaggerating to suit his case. And I'm wondering if you think that he's doing some of that, and if you, in between your interviews with him over the 2 year or so period, if you went to, you know, historians and asked them for their take on things that he said to see if it jived with their understanding of recent history.
I sometimes think of people like a deck of cards. We think that people have to be one thing when in fact they're many things. You said that people look at the movie and they say, well, McNamara is not being forthcoming here. McNamara is being evasive. McNamara is lying. McNamara is making remark after remark, which is self-serving in some way. My answer is, of course, he's human. It is all there. But what is also there is what I would call an honest attempt to grapple with the past, to grapple with his own history and the history that he was part of. You asked me, have I talked to historians? And the answer is endlessly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's not as though there is a unanimity of opinion.
Absolutely.
On many. Also, what's so interesting is that in history, you work with the information that you have at hand. You know, I believe that there's a real history back there, but often important pieces are missing. These presidential recordings from the Kennedy and Johnson libraries have only recently been released. And yes, they provide important pieces of evidence that change our understanding of history.
Errol Morris's new film is called The Fog of War. He'll be back in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with film director Errol Morris. His new film, The Fog of War, is edited from over 20 hours of interviews with Robert McNamara, who served as Secretary of Defense under Presidents Kennedy and Johnson. McNamara was one of the architects of the war in Vietnam, but by the time he left the Johnson administration in 67, he had grown skeptical of the war. After refusing to discuss the war in public, he broke his silence with his 1995 memoir, which explained his anxieties about the war but offered no apology for his role in it. You know, I interviewed McNamara in 95 after his memoir was published.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, as I said, I've never seen him be as interesting and lively and anecdotal as in your movie. And when I interviewed him, I guess, you know, all of my instincts were, ask him why he hasn't apologized if he knew all this in advance. Ask him if he thinks he owes America an apology or an explanation. And I haven't listened back to the interview, but I think that's where I kept where I kept heading. And I'm wondering if your instinct was ever to do that yourself, because the movie isn't that. You're not saying, well, then apologize. You know, you're letting him speak, you're letting him tell his story, and a lot of interesting things emerge. And those things are very lively and attention getting. I mean, you want to hear it, and whether you end up completely believing it or not, you want to hear it. But was there ever an instinct in you saying, "Get him to apologize"? You know.
Sure. And, absolutely.
But did you kind of suppress that and just like let him talk, or did you keep kind of getting back to that?
Did I kind of suppress it? I like the idea of suppressing it. Maybe. It's interesting because when you say there's something missing, if people say, well, McNamara didn't go as far as I would like, or McNamara really didn't apologize, or McNamara didn't really confess, I would ask myself, what is it that they want to hear? What exactly are they looking for? And I ask myself, do I want to hear McNamara apologize for the war? And here's my answer. Not really.
Mm-hmm. Why not?
Because I don't think there is any apology for the war in this sense. How do you apologize for the death of 58,000 Americans and 2 to 3 million Vietnamese? I think he's done something far more interesting. He has gone back over the history of the war. Don't forget, this is the man who ordered the Pentagon Papers to be created. If you like, it's that same instinct to go back over the past, to look at it, to try to understand it. For the totally unsympathetic, the people who will hate McNamara no matter what, they will look at this attempt to go back over the past as excuse-making. Ah, yeah, sure, he's going back over the past, but he's going over the past just to provide a gloss on the past, to make himself look better. My answer is no. When he suggests that he and LeMay were war criminals in World War II, and he tells a story that is so different from any other story I've heard about that period. I don't look at it as an attempt to whitewash the past, but as a sincere attempt to go back over the past, to think about the past.
Mm-hmm. When you interviewed McNamara, and this was about 24 hours worth of interviews we're talking about, do you think he ever expected that you were warming him up and just laying the trap, and in the end there would be an ambush? Because that is an interview technique.
It's not my technique.
But he wouldn't necessarily know that. I mean, because you never know till it's over.
I mean, I'm always surprised. I said that for me, interviews are investigative.
Mm-hmm.
When I was making The Thin Blue Line years ago, a movie credited with getting an innocent man out of prison in Texas, I was surprised how, if I let people alone, if I allow them to talk without interrupting them, I could learn so much more than in an adversarial interview. Maybe it's a difference in philosophy. Because when you're playing the Mike Wallace game, a well-known game in interviewing.
Mm-hmm.
Back the subject against the wall.
Mm-hmm.
Try to get him to contradict himself. It's kind of the police idea of interviewing. You have a subject, break him down, make him fess up. I'm interested in something different. I'm not really interested in backing my subjects into a corner. I'm interested in learning something about how they see the world.
Your interview with McNamara, as it is in the movie The Fog of War, starts with him having to pick up where he left off, I guess because like the tape or the film had run out, and he has to like pick up in the middle of the sentence. In fact, let me just play this little excerpt.
Now, I remember exactly the sentence I left off on. I remember how it started. And it was cut off in the middle, but you can fix it up some way. I don't want to go back, introduce the sentence, because I know exactly what I wanted to say.
Go ahead.
Okay. Any military commander who is honest with himself or with those he's speaking to will admit that he has made mistakes in the application of military power. He's killed people unnecessarily, his own troops or other troops, through mistakes, through errors of judgment. 100 or thousands or tens of thousands, maybe even 100,000. But he hasn't destroyed nations. And the conventional wisdom is don't make the same mistake twice. Learn from your mistakes. And we all do. Maybe we make the same mistake three times, but hopefully not four or five. There'll be no learning period with nuclear weapons. You make one mistake, you're going to destroy nations.
That's Robert McNamara in the very opening of The Fog of War, and my guest is the filmmaker, Errol Morris. You know how I was talking about how I had two reactions to a lot of the movie? I had two reactions to seeing this part of the interview, especially at the very beginning. Part of me said, wow, he's being kind of manipulative here. He knows exactly what he's going to say. He's saying it. He's so kind of conscious of himself as an interviewee. But then the other part of me said, yes, he should be. He has something really important to say here about, lessons about nuclear weapons and being, being in a position of power in the nuclear era. This is really important. I'm glad he remembered what he wanted to say. Tell me why you wanted to lead with this, in a way, very self-conscious moment of him saying, I'm going to pick up exactly where I left off. I know what I want to say.
Well, among other things, he's a control freak.
Right.
And it's interesting to be reminded of that fact at the very beginning. In fact, we see at the very beginning of the movie, we see him in 1964 doing pretty much the same thing that he's doing in 2001.
No, at one point he says to you that he learned early on, never answer the question that is asked of you. Answer the question that you wish had been asked of you. And he says, and quite frankly, I follow that rule. It's a very good rule. Did he follow that rule with you? Did he, like, consistently answer what you wanted him, you know, what you had asked? Or did he tell you, did he just answer the questions he wished you had asked? You know what I mean? How much did he kind of control what the answers and what the message was going to be?
I had an argument with my editor, Karen Schmier, because in the dailies, in the actual interview itself, after he says this, I ask him, are you doing this to me? And he smiles and laughs. She wanted to put it in. I didn't, because I felt it was already implied.
Right, right.
But of course, there's always an element of that. There's an element of that here and now, talking to you. Everybody wants to answer the questions they wish they had been asked. McNamara is not alone in that respect.
My guest is film director Errol Morris. His new documentary about Robert McNamara is called The Fog of War. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is Errol Morris, and his new documentary, The Fog of War, is an interview with Robert McNamara. Now, one of the things that you are really able to do in your movies is take what some people might think, oh, that's just going to be a talking head movie, and you make it very cinematic. The person who's speaking is shot in a simple but visually interesting way, not because there's like a lot of crazy things going on in the background. It's just framed well. And then it is intercut occasionally with, in McNamara's case, with footage of the Vietnam War, footage of World War II, with, I think, a very little bit of reenactments, kind of visual images that evoke the era. Can you talk a little bit about how you see the job of making what is basically an interview into a movie, into something that will be cinematic, that we will actually want to look at for a couple of hours, or nearly a couple of hours?
You're absolutely right in describing these stories as anecdotal. Amazing anecdotes about central historical events. Whenever I hear a story, particularly if it's a good story, images immediately come to mind. And it becomes very hard to resist the temptation to shoot those images. In fact, usually I am unable to resist the temptation and I go ahead and do it. Part of The Fog of War is a story of dropping things from the sky. Bombing, if you like. And we have many instances of it in the story, from the firebombing of Tokyo to bombing in Vietnam. There's another curious story among the many jobs that Robert McNamara has had over the years. He was also president of the Ford Motor Company. Not so well known, he pushed for safety at a time where safety was never really thought about. He argued for padded dashes, collapsible steering wheels, and first and foremost, seat belts. And he tells this remarkable story. This is the kind of thing you can't possibly make up, about how they dropped skulls down a stairwell at one of the dormitories at Cornell in order to determine the effect that crashes, automobile crashes, had on the human body. An instance where dropping things actually produces good rather than evil. And yes, I illustrated it. I sometimes think of my movies like a dream. A dream about 20th century history. A series of questions, of puzzles, of mysteries. And the hope is that the visuals take you deeper and deeper into those mysteries. That is, if I've done my job well.
Before you made movies, you were a private investigator. Now, you've said that as a movie documentarian, when you interview somebody, your goal isn't to do the police interrogation method where, you know, you're throwing them against the wall and you're throwing those questions at them until you wear them down and they're forced to tell you the truth. You want to know how they see the world and how they see their place in the world. So you don't have that kind of interrogation technique. But what about when you were a private investigator and you had to kind of surreptitiously get to the bottom of the story? I don't know if you actually talked to any of the people you were investigating or people who were related to the investigation, but did you have to use and to perfect a very different kind of way of verbally getting to the truth?
No. I started interviewing people long before I became a filmmaker. I used to do interviews with a tape recorder. This should be something familiar. No picture, just audio.
Mm-hmm.
And I had this, call it a perverse enthusiasm for doing interviews where I hardly talked at all. It's something that carried over to my filmmaking and to my work as a private investigator. The big surprise, there was hardly any difference between working as a private investigator and working as an interviewer making a film. After all, what is the job at its heart? It's listening to people, creating a situation where people want to talk to you, want to tell you things, and putting yourself in a position where you can listen. I once thought, I was in the middle of this murder investigation in the Thin Blue Line, could I make this movie with actors? And the answer is absolutely no. Couldn't be done. Because when you have the real people on the screen, you're put in this strange relationship, maybe the same relationship that I have with them, talking to them in a room or a studio. Who are these people? Can I believe them? Why are they saying what they're saying? What are they thinking? And if I've done my job correctly, that same kind of mystery should emerge in the film as well. You and the audience should be put in that same position that I found myself.
I know you've made some TV commercials for...
Oh, not some.
Lots?
Many, 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 many TV commercials.
Do you want to name some of the people you've made them for? Companies?
Fairly long list. Well, I like this idea. This gives me an opportunity to do a commercial for my commercials. I've done them for Cisco, Intel, Apple, IBM, Ford, Honda, Miller High Life. Someone fairly recently came up to me and said, I really, really, really admire your work. And I said, thank you very much. And then they said, those Miller High Life commercials are fantastic.
Well, I'm sure you have a pretty nice budget for those commercials. Are there techniques that you've learned making commercials that you've been able to adapt to making your movies?
Absolutely. Well, goes both ways.
Uh-huh.
Stuff that I've learned making movies that applies to making commercials and vice versa. I've been lucky. I get to do interesting work. I get to do interesting work on my own and in commercials as well.
Well, Errol Morris, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you for having me.
Errol Morris's new documentary is called The Fog of War. It's now playing in New York, Los Angeles, and Washington, D.C., and will open nationwide on January 23rd. Coming up, classical music critic Lloyd Schwartz reviews a new series of historical classic music performances on DVD. This is Fresh Air.